Across the UK and around the world by webcast and podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Thank you again for being part of this show. This is the third webcast edition of the show that, of course, used to be on TalkSport Radio in the UK. A lot of people now finding the show, getting emails still from people who say, where did the radio show go and how can we hear it and what happened to you and all the rest of it? Well, this is where I live now. The website is www.theunexplained.tv. I think that's a great web address, certainly one that you remember. Thank you to Martin for the great theme. Martin, I hope that you're enjoying having the theme used on the show here. I had a lot of good reaction to that too, and thank you to Graham, my webmaster, for doing his top work as well. I'm not going to hang about. A lot to get into. Three great guests. We're going to start with Birbel Moore. Now, she is the woman who hit the headlines in the UK, and this will mean very little to you if you're listening anywhere other than the UK at the moment, because the person we're talking about is going to work in the US as well, I understand. There's a television presenter here in the UK called Noel Edmonds. Now, he's a guy who made a lot of money and was very successful, and his business activities continue to be successful. But his TV presenting career went very flat, very quiet. He wasn't doing anything on television for a long time. Then the papers started to report that Noel was going to be doing a new kind of show called Deal or No Deal. To cut a long story very short, this show's been a huge success. A few months after the show launched, with great ratings, it started to appear in the papers that he had used a book called The Cosmic Ordering Service by Birbel Moore, and the speculation was that he'd used that to not foresee, but to order up from the cosmos success, which he obviously got. Now, whether that is or isn't correct, I've got Birbel Moore on from Germany, and she's very good. She's going to be the first on the show. Second on the show, we're going to talk to Anna Vangelina, who, of course, came into the show in London a couple of times, American psychic. She's been involved in some detective work that makes some fascinating and chilling listening. And at the end of it all, something that I know you're going to love. This is pure UK content, this. This is a real British story. This is the story of a claimed mass abduction by aliens in the town of Grantham in the UK. If you don't know the UK, Grantham is sort of in the middle and to the right a little bit. It's quite a quiet town, and it's only been famous up to now for being the birthplace of our ex-Prime Minister, Mrs. Thatcher. But there are claims that in the 60s, there was an alien abduction on a big scale there. I'm going to be talking to an author called Anthony R. Malins about that. He's written a book called Asylum, and what he has to say might fascinate you, might shock you too. But first up, here's Birbel Moore, live from Germany, about her book, The Cosmic Ordering Service. Birbel, thanks for coming on the show. Hello.
Hello, Howard. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I hope, having read your book, I'm going to be doing even better, I have to say. Now, I don't know, where do we start here? Whereabouts in Germany are you, by the way?
In Munich.
Okay.
Or at least close to Munich. We live in the country.
Oh, well, that sounds nice. But as somebody whose books are now read all over the world, why are you still in Germany? Why didn't you choose to sort of sell out and go to America?
Oh, I like Germany. I live in one of the most beautiful parts of Germany here. There's no reason to move.
That's very, you sold it to me anyway. Now, this book that I'm calling you about now, and I wanted to talk with you about now, has got a lot of publicity in the UK. And I don't know whether you're aware of any of this, but it's because a television presenter called Noel Edmonds, who's very well known in England, not known anywhere else, almost, I don't know whether he rebuilt his career because he was a successful and wealthy man anyway, but certainly got back his television career, and the newspapers here speculated it was because he used your book.
Yeah, I heard about it. Actually, it was very funny for me too, because when that happened just a few days ago, I had had an offer for a second income. And people here keep telling me, you can't live on books forever, nobody does that, it's a miracle anyway, because I sold more than 1 million in Germany now over the last 7 years. But they told me it's going to stop somewhere and you need a second income. And then I wondered, is that really true? And I asked the cosmos, dear cosmos, please send me a sign whether I really have to look for a second income, whether I have to take that choice, or whether I can live on books even longer. And then a few days later, this man, Noel Edmonds, chose to say that on TV. And we were on holiday in La Palma. It's a Canarian island. And suddenly I got phone calls from all my publishers, Bärbel, people want to interview from England. And I thought, well, that's a great answer from the universe. So well, I just dropped that chance for a second income.
I've got to say that I bought your book at a big Borders bookstore in London a couple of weeks ago, took it away on holiday with me. But the book is so popular that they've actually got it right by the checkout, right by the cash till there. You don't even have to go to the shelves and look for it. It's there.
It even started like that. You know, in the beginning, I only had a small newspaper. It was something I just loved to do. I never made any money with it at all. It was always more expenses than income. But I just loved to do it. And then eventually I had planned to write a book on coincidences because I started as a real skeptic myself. And then I found out what we have inside somehow creates our reality outside. So I wanted to show that in stories from people and that there is no such thing as coincidence. It always has got something to do with what we expect from life.
Well, a lot of level-headed people and a lot of spiritual people, all kinds of people believe, don't they, that if you think that you're going to get a thing, then you might well get a thing. I can tell you in my own life, I used to use a thing in London trying to find places to park my car. And I used to visualize a place to park my car. And you'll never guess, in a crowded car park where there were no parking spaces, I would always find that one parking space, right down to the point where once I was with my sister, and she will remember this and confirm this, and I said, there's going to be a parking space in this busy car park, and it will be next to a green Volkswagen, and it will be on the third floor. Well, we drove all around that car park, we got up to the third floor, and there was a green Volkswagen that I couldn't have seen, and there was my parking space.
Great, I see. I don't have to convince you. It's where we all start, with parking places. You know, years before, I even did that with my mom because she was a real skeptic too. And she was there in Munich to visit me and we wanted to go to the theater and we had to take two cars for some reason. And she said, oh, we are going to lose each other. And I said, oh, no problem. We just order two parking places next to each other. And she just looked at me as if I was sick and went away. But she took her car, I took my car, and we went in the center of Munich, and it's full. It's probably just as bad as London. And we got two parking places, just one after the other. And she was almost scared.
But the one thing I found with this, and we'll get into the specifics of what you do and how you do it in just a little while, but the one thing I found about this was that certainly with the parking spaces, you would only get the parking space if you absolutely believed you were going to get it. If you had 2% doubt in your mind, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think it's not, you don't have to believe that strong, you just don't have, you can't think about it anymore. If you just think it for a second and drop the thought, it's strong enough. But
right.
If you spend a lot of thought and there's doubt among these thoughts, then it's a problem. It's
because your mind starts to play with it like a dog with a bone, it starts to worry the idea, yeah?
Well, I think it's like if you call a regular warehouse with mail order and you call them a minute and tell them I want a red shirt. The next second you call, maybe I want a pink shirt. And a second again you call, I'm not sure whether I really want that red shirt.
But that's the problem, isn't it? Maybe that's why all of us as human beings, most of us don't get exactly what we want a lot of the time, because maybe we're not really sure.
Yeah,
we can't make up our mind. And I don't know, I kind of believe in astrology. I'm a Gemini and we can never decide what to do from one day to the next, you know?
Well, you know what? I have to tell you one story because a friend of my husband, he wanted desperately a ticket for the soccer world championship in Munich.
Okay.
And he couldn't get one. And then he said, that can't be true. Universe, you have to deliver one. And he's a coach for companies. And a week later, a completely new company approached him and they said they need a coach to train the security people in Germany during the world championship. And now he's training them. And of course, he has to be there while the games take place.
Of course he could not be there.
He's going there for free. He's
now
very happy.
That's exactly it. So the book is called, the one we're talking about, The Cosmic Ordering Service. And let's just see if I'm right here. The idea behind this is, if you have a clear idea of what it is you want and you ask for it clearly, chances are you're going to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really is as simple as that. I mean, this is not a big book, and it's not a difficult book to read. I had a few days away. I didn't have a lot of time for a complicated book. And your book's premise idea was simple. It was just a simple thing that, you know, it came back time and time again, and there were many examples of it. And in fact, examples from your own life, because you started using this, I understand, to find boyfriends.
Yes, and I started it to prove my friend to be wrong, because I was a complete skeptic. I believed only in Newton's laws, and that was it. And she told me, because I was looking for a new boyfriend at that time, I could ask the universe for help. And just to be cynic, I said to her, oh, you think you can order from the universe? What nonsense. And then she said, well, but you may get some help from there, and it's not all what, the world is not only what you see, there's more to it. And just to prove her wrong, we did that first ordering, and I made a list to make it more difficult with 9 points. He had to be vegetarian, because I'm vegetarian, a non-smoker, a non-alcoholic, and so on and so on, and he had to do Tai Chi. That's all the things I wanted.
Wow, that was very specific.
Yes, and then I said, just to make sure it's no coincidence, let's set a delivery week in 3 months' time. I took out my date book, and we set a week in 3 months. And she said, I'm really difficult. It can't work like that. And she was all, yeah, sad and angry. But I just did it. I went to the balcony and read it out loud in the universe. It was in the middle of the night. And then we stopped discussing, because I said, either your universe is going to deliver or not. And it did. And that was when everything changed for me, because I thought, that's no coincidence.
Well, that's
we made
proof.
It so difficult.
Proof that there's something going on there, but
yeah.
It wasn't entirely, as we say in England, it wasn't entirely plain sailing, was it? Because I understand that the requirements that you drew up became so specific. There were like 20 or 24 points, and by the time you found somebody with those 24 points, it wasn't really
showing
what you wanted.
In exactly the right week. That was what convinced me.
But it wasn't always entirely what you wanted that you got.
I got what I wanted, but I got something in addition that I did not want. Until I finally found out it's better to order just the kind of husband that is good for me, and where we can both be happy with each other and be not specific about anything else. But guess what? He's even doing Tai Chi. Even my husband is doing Tai Chi.
But wow.
I just stopped looking for more points on the list and left it to the universe, was really good for me.
So instead of saying you want a non-smoker, 5'10" tall, left-handed, whatever, you just said, I want somebody who's going to make me happy.
Yeah, and who's going to be happy with me too.
Right, that sounds good to me. What sorts of things can you use this for, though? If say, for example, I don't know, I wanted to enhance my career, get a great new career, can I do that? Can I do that easily?
Sure. But I think it's always nice also to have some little orderings, because it's when doubt comes in. If you have only one big problem in life and you try to order that away, it's going to be difficult. You have no experience what it feels like when the, let's say, cosmic delivery service calls you. They don't ring the doorbell. They call you inside. It's little signs or little callings that make you take another road than usual, and suddenly you get to the point where you want to be. So you need your intuition. And if you start with small things, let's say I mislay my glasses and I can't find them without glasses anymore, I just ask the universe for help. If I mislay my keys, I ask the universe for help.
But maybe in a way we all do this. I can remember a story staying, 10 years or so ago in Carcassonne in France. And you know, the Carcassonne is a walled city. It's very old. And the hotels there are outside the walls, and the restaurants and what have you are inside the walls. And I can remember having a meal there, and I had a pin, you know, a badge on my jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way back from the restaurant inside the walled city, that thing must have fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I thought, I'm going to go back and I'm going to find it by the Coca-Cola machine that I passed near the walls. Well, do you know what? 12 hours later, the next morning, I walked back there and the badge, the pin, was lying there on the cobblestones exactly where I expected it to be.
Great. Right.
So maybe that's an example. I don't know, but look.
Yeah, I think start with small things, because then you feel more encouraged. You know what it feels like to listen to your intuition.
Yeah, but there's one big problem about this, and the big problem is this. Are you not just seeing the future? Are you not just being clairvoyant? You're not actually requesting something. You're just, seeing something that's going to happen anyway.
Well, in that case, be happy that you are always expecting the best.
Yeah, that's very, very true. What's the best example of something that you yourself have done with this?
There's so many things. Maybe when we by mistake, more or less by mistake, ordered our twins. We have twins, and I always wanted twins, but I wanted non-identical ones. And my husband, his best friend when he was a child, he was a twin too, but he was an identical twin, and he always had problems with being identical with his brother. And he said, oh no, don't let's order twins, it may be identical twins. Then we went on holidays in India, we forgot about it all, and my husband read a book saying that we always should invite good spirits and everything will become even better. And if we invite good spirits while having sex, it will feel nicer. So we did that, and we both thought, well, I really could feel the good spirits coming. Yes, me too. And I was pregnant after that, and I told my husband, you know what? We invited good spirits in plural. It's going to be my twins. And he said, shut up, shut up. And I went to the doctor, and it was my two-egg twins.
What a great story.
A boy and a girl now.
And how are they? How old are they now?
4 and a half.
Okay, so this is all good. So that must be the best example in your life.
Oh, you know, I was pretty old when I got pregnant. I was 37, and the doctor told me, oh, that's dangerous, you're too old. And I just thought, oh, if you only knew, this is a cosmic delivery. They are going to be healthy, I know. And they were. They came just right at the right moment, and they both had 3 kilo. It's a lot for twins.
Now, this is something.
It would be like that.
Barbel, this is something that you wanted and was good for you and your husband. It's exactly what you wanted, and it's made you very happy. What happens, though, if say, I program to, I don't know, get £1 million? If I wanted to get €1 million, £1 million, $1 million, anything, maybe that's not a good thing for me. Maybe that's not going to bring me happiness. Will the cosmos still bring that to me?
During the years, I even met people who ordered €1 million and some of them got it. But I found out only those people who are ready not to spoil their life with €1 million really get it. And the rest of them, they get teachings. All kinds of things happen and they find out it's not that easy to deal with such an amount of money like they ever thought. Like one guy, he ordered €1 million. He thought he could win it in the lottery. Or he might find a job where he might earn that much. Instead, he met many people who won the lottery and spoiled it all and became as unhappy as could be. And it made him think, and he said, maybe I'm not ready yet too. Maybe there are things I have to learn. And then he was happy with going on and learning these things, and I know he earns at least twice as much as last year now.
So only these things when they're ready, when the time is right.
Yeah, I think if you really ask the cosmos, you're asking oneness, and oneness is not delivering to do bad things to us, it wants to help us. So if we have real wishes coming from our heart, and they are good for us, they are the fastest ones to be delivered.
Are we not playing, though, with dangerous forces here? Because presumably if you can request good things, you can also, maybe even inadvertently, without meaning to, request bad things.
I think in that case, you cannot ask oneness, you have to ask the darkness only. Because remember, or just think of an ordinary mail order house. And imagine you would call them, I don't like my neighbor, please send something dirty and ugly to him. They will not do it. They will never ever deliver anything to you. And if you are talking to the cosmos as oneness, it's never going to deliver things like that too. You have to go and work with black magic or something.
Okay, but that's, presumably you would think that's not a good idea itself.
No, of course not.
Now, when you've learned this skill, and it's almost not a skill, isn't it? It's almost something that we all have inside, we're just learning to use. But when you learn this skill, and when you've acquired this ability, where can you take it? How far can you go with this?
Oh, that's what I asked myself too, and I even got answers for that. I asked the cosmos, look, there's so many poor people on the planet. Could I order to help them all to become more rich or at least have an income and earn their living? And the next man I met was Muhammad Yunus from Bangladesh. Do you know him? He has a bank house for poor people. He gives money to people who have no shoes, no house, no anything, and he still gives money to them without any securities at all. And he has millions of people now, millions of clients who got money from him and who build up their own future. And I was really curious to meet him. I wanted to know it all, how it works. And he started with $27. He just gave it out to poor people in the next village. And they returned it to him every week. They returned small amounts. And then he gave $50, then $100, then $1,000. And now it's $500 million per year he's giving out as credit to poor people. And he says, if you really have the wish in your heart, the cosmos is going to show you how to do it.
But it shouldn't, should it? Should it be not really entirely about I want, I want, I want for me? Should it?
Well, in this case, he didn't want it for himself.
No, but what you're talking about in the book, though, is asking for things for yourself to enhance your life. Like I talked about perhaps getting £1 million or €1 million to enhance my life.
What happens? If you do that for a while, your wishes start changing, because I think what makes us really happy is making others happy, but we think we are not capable of doing that. But once we start exploring the universe and finding out we can have all our wishes fulfilled, we start thinking bigger, and we think, oh, if that's true, maybe I could help my sister, my brother, maybe I could do something greater. And then that's when greater visions come to us, and when we think maybe we can do it. These things are things we never can do alone. We need some help from the cosmos.
So what do you think you're tapping into? Are you tapping into what people call God? What is this force?
Well, I've really on purpose not called it God, because there's so many religions fighting each other. I called it the universe to say it's oneness. It's everything, but it's up to everybody else and anybody else what they want to call it.
Okay, so we haven't got a name for it. It could be God, it could be something.
It could be Allah, it could be Buddha, it could be anything.
And you're absolutely confident in yourself that you're not tapping into something that that perhaps potentially is bad, and it might give you good things in the short term, but in the very long term might bring you trouble.
That's not the experience. If you know what, if you fear that could happen, then it might be a good idea for yourself if you order something, end your ordering with a sentence, and please let it happen in the way to the highest good of everybody. Then you are on the safe side. But if you don't have that thought on your mind, it will not happen, because what we fear is what we are going to get.
You know, I think you're right in many ways thinking about it, because Our perceptions, our requirements from life change over the years, don't they? I mean, I would have said when I started my career, I want to be a great big success and do lots of big, successful, high-profile things. Well, I've done some successful, high-profile things, and they've been very nice. But now, as I've got older, the things that I wish for are more like fulfillment, to be happy.
Yeah, it changes. Once you get in touch with that inner voice and your intuition, your heart wishes are going to come out. Before, you don't even dare to dream them or to think them or to feel them. But once you get in touch with your real inner self, they are going to come out.
But Berbel, do you believe there's a plan for all of us, a global plan for each and every one of us?
Well, I hope this plan is to be for final peace on Earth for everyone. I think it's possible. You think so many things are changing now. I don't know, are you discussing all that research on genetic material, or the new biology, or mirror neurons? Are you discussing that in England?
Joe, you mean, are we talking about cloning?
For example, but I mean, here we have many books now about it, because scientists thought that with our genetic material, if we have a disease, we just cut out the bad gene, put in a real one, a healthy one, and everything will be done. But it doesn't work that way. They find out they can do that, and the disease still goes on. So it's not the genetic material. And they thought we have 125,000 genes to program our whole body. But now they found out we have only 35,000. We have only 1,500 more genes than a mouse, a little mouse. We are not much different from a mouse. So what really causes our diseases or what we look like, it's more our inner attitude than anything else.
So what we're getting to here is that, as a lot of people have said over the years, that sometimes when people get sick, they make themselves sick.
Yes, and scientists, they wanted to find out the absolute opposite, but they didn't. They finally had to say, oh, hell, stop, that's us, we are doing it. They found out, they found it from shock research. They found out if someone has a shock, they can suddenly be very sick. But it can be vice versa. If someone gets in contact with that inner power, which I call the universe, which you can call God, if they are really happy, very much in love, it can return the genetic material. It can also repair itself. That was thought to be impossible so far, and now they have to admit it's possible, and we are doing it.
So, look, if everybody lived according to the principles in your book, and they all programmed for good things for themselves and for everybody else, what kind of world do you think it would be?
Oh, very easily. If everyone would be happy and everyone would be connected with that inner voice that's the cosmos inside of them, nobody would want to destroy nature or other people. That's only coming out of all kinds of fears and strange ideas. But if we are really connected to our, let's say, divine source, nobody wants to destroy anything.
Now, you have a very successful book in the bookshop that I went to and bought it. It was selling copies even while I was there. It's obviously making you some money. You have your family, you have your husband, you have your nice life in Germany. Do you have all you want?
What I would want is for everybody to become healthy and live in peace with others. And since I'm living in that world, it's really something I'm still wishing for.
Bärbel, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so pleased I was able to track you down in Munich. And I wish you a wonderful summer, and thank you for talking to me. The book is called The Cosmic Ordering Service, and I don't even have to say that it's available through a certain publisher. Just go into a bookstore. The big bookstores have it in the UK. Very popular book, and I hope we can talk again. Just before you go, what's your next project?
It's a book on sexuality. It's going to come out next spring in Germany.
Give me a taster. What does it say?
Do you know Barry Long?
No.
We had a funny, request or research here in Germany. 1,000 women were asked what they need most of everything and what they really cannot give up for, let's say, a month. And then number one was TV romances. Most women said they cannot give up watching TV romances.
Okay.
Number two was chocolate. Number three was having a hot bath. Mm-hmm. And men were wondering how many women will say sex is really important for them. And it was only 6%.
Well, that's bad news for a lot of guys, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think if you really look into it, what these women are looking for with the romances, they want love and nice feelings, and they want to feel good, and they are looking for something sweet in the chocolate. And obviously, our today's sexuality is missing that. If sexuality wasn't missing it, it would be number one again, and that's what I wrote that book for.
So what, you think we've turned sex into a sort of commodity now? We're missing the point?
Yes, I think so.
Now, that's going to be a great book. We've got to talk about that. Bärbel, a pleasure to talk to you. Like I say, the book is called The Cosmic Ordering Service. And do you have a website?
Yes. It's www.bärbelmoer. It's with A-E, also BAERBELMOHR.DE.
Well, I look forward to
there's an English part in the homepage too.
And thank you, Bärbel Moer. Bärbel's book, again, is The Cosmic Ordering Service. And as we said, right now it's so successful that you'll find it by the checkouts in some of the big bookstores, certainly in the UK. It really is popular now. It's very, very easy and very interesting read as well, I found. Now, Anna Evangelina, psychic in America, is somebody who is unique, I think. She has a unique manner about her, very direct, very warm, and is very confident about her success rate in predicting things and contacting spirits and all the rest of it. She's done a lot of work with detectives in America and is involved in some fascinating stuff at the moment. I caught up with her very briefly in a London hotel last week, and here's what she said.
I have a tendency to intimidate people because I'm constantly reading them, so it doesn't shut off. This psychic ability really doesn't shut off.
And does that ever get embarrassing? I don't think I ever asked you that on the radio, but does it ever get embarrassing where sometimes you're going to pick something up about somebody and maybe feed it back to them without even consciously thinking about it, and perhaps you think afterwards, I shouldn't have said that.
I do it all the time. I shouldn't have said that. But I think they also feel that, boy, she's reading me. Oh, she knows some secret about me. And this is why it could be even a put-off. A lot of people are standoffish towards me because of that reason.
Now, we have to say we are doing this little chat now in a hotel corridor where the staff kind of walking past, but it's all marble halls and what have you. So if we shout like that, that's why we're doing
that's
this here.
Yes, absolutely.
It's really weird, but it was the only opportunity that we could get because I know it's a flying visit for you. So what do you want to achieve here when you come to the UK? Do you want to be a star name here? What do you want?
I don't see why not. I'm probably one of the best in the U.S., and I'm very embraced and welcomed here in the U.K., And I think that I feel, because there's so much history and haunted homes and in the spirit world, and everybody who's anybody has been or has visited a psychic or an astrologer, even politicians and head of state. So I think everyone is quite comfortable now. It's out in the open if you have a psychic or your own private psychic.
That's right. And you won't even know this, but there's an organization that you have in the States too called Reader's Digest, and they did a poll recently, and the poll said, this is 3-4 weeks back, 6 out of 10 people in the UK believe in psychic things. Now, if you'd asked those questions a few years ago, you wouldn't have got a result like that.
They wouldn't have admitted it. In the 80s, everybody was into astrology. Hey, what's your sign? But back, if you even go in, back in history, in Caesar, everyone had their own private psychic.
And that could be. Well, do you do readings for people who are like famous, who want consultations, if they, you know, people making big decisions,
yes,
that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. I'm booked till January. I do FBI, which is your MI5 here, work on cases, all the local celebrities that visit Michigan, and a lot of very successful and powerful men as well.
Okay, and if the security services here in the UK, because you know we have some problems like you do with terrorism and people plotting against us, if they asked you privately, maybe they have already, for help, would you be able to do that?
Yes, I do, and I welcome anyone that would approach me and to help and be in the public service as well.
Because one of the things that we talked about the last time you were on the radio was the murder investigation work that you did, and you told me a few things about some cases here in the UK. Anything you worked on lately?
I'm working on one now, which is the most famous case in the United States, was Jimmy Hoffa.
Right.
I was approached in January. I was taken to the location. They had 50 agents. The U.S. attorney called me.
I've got to wind back here because everybody listening to this in America knows who Jimmy Hoffa is. I would think 30% of people in the U.K. know, but Jimmy Hoffa was a union leader, the Teamsters Union, and this guy disappeared. And the word was that he was buried in concrete somewhere. He'd upset some people, and he disappeared. Nobody's ever found his body.
He was taken from a restaurant in Michigan. It's the biggest unsolved mystery in the world, you might say, because it led up to even being friends with the president. And I said, don't waste your time. There's no body on this property. They were devastated. They thought, oh, you jinxed us and things of that nature. And they come to find out, nobody.
Because they won't like that. Everybody's got a theory about where Jimmy Hoffa is. A lot of work is being done this year about where is Jimmy Hoffa. So a lot of people have vested interests in saying, yes, we know where the body is, even if they don't go and take you to it.
There's no body. They will never find a body.
They'll never find a body.
Just
well, what
like
happened?
In Aruba, it's because the family members are still, on behalf of them, to respect the family that is still living, related to him, it might be what we call disappeared. So it's not a full body.
Okay, so just to put this nicely, and at least we're on the internet now, we're not on radio, but perhaps somebody chopped him up into pieces and that's what happened.
Yes.
How terrible is that?
It's devastating, but to the family to hear that.
When you look into a case like that, even if it isn't a famous case, do you see pictures of what happened in the demise of that person?
Yes, I do. But to be telling the FBI that they took over these people's home, dissembled the farm. I mean, they dug holes, and it cost them $5 million. No body. And for me to tell them months in advance, don't bother, it's quite interesting. It's an honor that, thank God, that, well, I hate to say that the family really didn't find it, because I don't think it's a full body. I think he was dismembered.
There's a show I think you should be on, and I talked to the people who founded that show and are doing this show in the States called Dead Famous. You might have seen it, where they go to locations where people like Elvis lived and Howard Hughes, my namesake, lived, and they try and get the vibes from there. You'd be so good on that.
Yes, you know what? And I would challenge any other person that really does that, because they're too general when they walk into a home. I do the haunted homes, and I do receive detail and specific messages. And so while I'm here, or in my next visit, I would be happy to do that and receive a message, because I am not just psychic and a clairvoyant and a medium, but also the Aruba case. I was called on the Aruba case with the missing girl, Natalie. Again, I stated no body was found. And you know what? To this day, they don't even have the correct person.
Now, one of the other things you do, some mediums in this country, they just do readings for people. And, you know, they do some good work. It has to be said. There are some who don't, but there are many who do.
Yes, there are.
But you also do predictions about stuff that is going to happen in the world. Now, we're halfway through 2006, just over. So what's your hit rate been on predictions for this year? Tell me what you've said.
Well, in January, I'm on the news on Fox, and I make all the predictions for the 06, which were... the Israel Prime Minister Sharon would be sick, and also the Pope would pass, and he did, Johnny Carson, Britney Spears would be pregnant, Angelina Jolie would have the baby girl, and some local celebrities as well. Current events, world events, chest area for Dick Cheney, our vice president. A little setback for President Bush as far as health issues. Tony Blair, we all know he's leaving. And also entering Iran, leaving or announcing some of our troops will be pulled back before 06 is finished, probably by February of 07.
Now, that's interesting because the government here and in the U.S., they've started to soften people up for the possibility that maybe the troops may come home.
They will. The majority will still be based there. Our biggest threat will be still Korea and China, because they will not be let down. You know, they're not going to comply to these the weapons. But Iran is going to be a big threat. But Russia and China might also, you know, become allies or back them. So it's going to be quite difficult to enter Iran.
A guy I spoke to, a big mistake. Mm-hmm. Let's go back on that point. A big mistake to go to Iran.
These weapons, and there was no weapons in Iraq.
So let's get it absolutely clear, because it's important. You think that we might go into Iran, and if we do, it's going to be a mistake.
Big mistake. And we might even enter and have to be pulled out. It is going to be the shortest entry and retreat. We're basically going to be told to leave, or it's going to get nasty.
Something that's true both sides of the Atlantic, the British and the Americans now are completely celebrity obsessed. You know, celebrity culture is everywhere in this country now, as it never used to be. It's always been in your country. And I know you get asked to do celebrity predictions, so have you got a couple to fire at me for the rest of this year?
You know what? They love the scandal. Paris Hilton, again, will be engaged. You know, she will be engaged. But I think that there's more trouble brewing with being a mother with Britney Spears and questioning how and who's the caregiver, really, for that child. But I do believe that... I'm not saying this will be the last year for David Beckham, but for the next year or two, I think he's going to be entering a new business, a new, you might say, career.
Have you heard of Robbie Williams? Do you know who Robbie Williams is?
Robin Williams?
Not Robin Williams.
Okay.
No, all right, well, we'll give you Robin Williams. What about Robin Williams?
I think health issues for him, and we're going to see him back on screen finally again.
He'll be okay. That's the good thing.
Yes.
Now, look, if you'd seen he or anybody else was not going to be all right, I presume you wouldn't say it. Is that
no,
right? Or do you just say it?
I would say it.
Now, isn't that going against one of the, like, ethical principles of being a psychic?
This is what happens. We should all have principles, whether you're a psychic or not. But if I don't say something, they'll question, well, why didn't she see it? And if I do say something, why did you say it? So, you know what? Just say it.
So as we kneel here in this hotel corridor, freedom of speech, as we kneel here in this hotel corridor doing the weirdest interview I've ever done anywhere, and thanks for making time, I think I've got a slogan for you, okay? Everybody's got to have a slogan, catchphrase these days, and I've got yours. Anne Evangelina tells it like it is.
It is. Brutally honest.
Anne Evangelina interviewed in the last couple of days in a hotel corridor in the center of London. You know, you have to do these things if you're a broadcaster. And next time we'll try and get Anna into somewhere where we can speak for a little bit longer. But I thought you'd be interested in especially that stuff about Jimmy Hoffa. I think we're going to see and hear more of Anne Evangelina in the UK. And her website is annasthepsychic.com. That's A-N-A-S, the psychic, one word, .com. Lots of very good stuff there. Now, an amazing story, and I know I've said an amazing story a zillion times on The Unexplained, but boy, if ever there was one, this is. Anthony R. Mallins has written a book about claims of an abduction experiment or an abduction experience in the town of Grantham in Lincolnshire in the 1960s. Alien abduction right on our doorstep here in the UK, and he's online right now. Anthony, welcome to The Unexplained.
Oh, hello there, and hello to all the listeners.
Well, Anthony, it's good to get you on because I first found you. You were another one of these discoveries that I made on the internet, and I was just trawling through the archives, actually, of a local paper in Lincolnshire,
right.
And I found their reference to a man who'd written a book about what I thought was an astounding, amazing. I don't think I have a superlative to describe the story.
Okay.
But what I want you to do is to tell me that story. I'm not going to say anything. You just tell me the story that you've told in the book. What's it about?
Okay, well, obviously, if I were to tell you the complete story, we'd be here for a week. So I'll give you a snapshot view, which is what asylum is, of a very, very interesting event. Asylum is a very serious book, and certainly not your run-of-the-mill UFO story. the central theme of the book is incredible. It's about a UFO sighting and an alien abduction event that happened in Grantham in 1965. I introduced the book, and then the story is told to a group of ufologists in the form of an interview with the main character, who I have chosen to call Clive Powers, and who is also a victim of the abduction himself. The story goes on to carry intimate detail of Clive Powers' life, both before and after the event, when thousands of people in Grantham were involved in a mass alien abduction there. The book explains how this experience has spanned 40 years of his life and still continues today. Asylum also exposes all of this and the deep and sinister connection involving the MOD and others, finalizing with pictures of alien entities that were photographed years later at the site itself.
Let's get this clear. This is a true story.
This is based on a true story. And I will say based on a true story, if you ask me for the percentage, I would say 92% true story.
All right. Is the location the same? Is that what you've changed?
No. The only thing that has changed, actually, are the identities of the people who were involved.
How did you hear about this?
Well, I wasn't looking for it, and that's for sure. It was back in 1990, and I was living and working in the Orkney Islands at the top of Scotland there as a news cameraman and journalist for Grampian Television. And we'd been out on a story covering a visit of the Princess Royal, Princess Anne. It was at the end of the day, and as myself and the guys were walking back to the vehicle with all our kit, a guy walked up to me and just stuck a piece of paper into my pocket saying, "You may find this very interesting." It was a small note with a limited amount of information. It said, UFO in block caps, a name and a telephone number. And 10 years later, I found Clive Powers, and the rest of the story is in Asylum.
Now, most of us in the media get approached by people from time to time who have what they say are amazing stories to tell us. And quite often, you know this and I know this, we don't do anything about it. What was it that made you do something about that note?
Well, I didn't, I'll be honest with you, it was a considerable time on the scale. I mean, I kept the piece of paper because being in the job that I was doing, you do that. And I just got curious. I got very, very curious indeed. And one thing led to another. And I guess, in a way, finding Clive Powers became rather obsessional. Not in an unhealthy way. I just wanted to know really what was going on. And, you know, after all, it's not every day of the week. It was a quest, I guess, because not every day of the week does someone walk up to you and pop a piece of paper into your pocket and say, "You'll find this interesting."
Okay. So you tracked him down, and tell me how the story unfolded. How did you get to hear the detail behind it?
It was a very gradual process, and obviously the first thing I had to do was to find this guy and attempt to make some contact. And the very next thing that happened were messages flying about across email, and from there on I was invited to be a party to meetings which are depicted in the book.
And how do you know that you were not being elaborately hoaxed or scammed in this?
Well, you know, there are some things which can be elaborately hoaxed or scammed. I don't believe that this was any kind of elaborate hoax or scam. Just too much. Too many twists and turns. X-Files for real.
This is something that a lot of people are talking about now. Now, on the radio version of this program last year, I had a gentleman on called Paul Hellyer, who is an ex-Canadian defense minister, was in Trudeau's government in the 70s,
right,
and is now coming out and saying, actually, all of this stuff that you thought was science fiction, a lot of it is actually true, and politicians are lying to you. This seems to come from that stable of thought.
Right, okay, you're probably right. I believe, again, as I've depicted in the book, I believe that the government of that day, and probably any government at all, really don't have that much to do with this kind of subject, it is above them. After all, you can pick up books from a library, for example, which will give you a whole list of historical facts that have simply disappeared out of government offices, like our best nuclear secrets at one stage. Who on earth really would be prepared to trust that kind of government and that kind of structure with secrets of this nature?
But you hinted at the scale of this, and what we were saying was what? The mass abduction of a lot of people back in the 60s who were then put back where they were before. It's difficult, isn't it, surely, in this day and age, in that day and age, to keep something as big as that quiet?
Well, no. This is precisely, you're almost answering the question yourself, because the answer is very simply. You have to know how things were back then. In 1965, for example, and in that whole period, this was a time when a medical patient didn't have access to their medical records, and things that happened with the authorities were a very private and closed-door matter. And, of course, the media machine was not as it is today. It didn't exist as it is today. No mobile phones, no video cameras, digital cameras, camera phones. People were not generally inclined to speak out. And newspapers actually at that time were heavily censored where the subject of UFOs were concerned.
Well, that makes it easier for myths to spread, doesn't it?
It may make it easier for myths to spread, but however, it doesn't change the fact that things can happen and, you know, innocent members of the public do not know what's happened.
What do you think happened?
I believe implicitly that the story as outlined in the book is true. I believe that Clive Powers is quite a remarkable man, since he, he may be lucky, maybe unlucky, but however, either way, I think he's remarkable that he has been able to relate this story in far more detail than a lot of other people who are still out there can. And what is very interesting here is that the start, you asked me about promotional work that I've been doing. Well, I recently did a signing up in Grantham, and I was staggered. I was honestly staggered, and I'm very scared by the fact that as I sat there signing books, people, ordinary members of the public, stable, ordinary people were walking up to me and saying, I'd like to buy your book. I remember this. This happened. I want to buy your book, and I remember what happened.
What did happen? Tell me what happened. Specifically, give me a couple of examples of people who say that they went through this.
Okay, the kind of comments that I was getting was that they remember brilliant lights. They remember something happening to them that they couldn't adequately explain. It's a memory that is way back somewhere in their mind. It's the kind of memory and thought that, like other things, you may have it through your day's work, but it's, for some reason, it's held back, it's insignificant, and then something triggers that into the conscious memory. And this is exactly what these people were saying has happened to them. I mean, I couldn't believe that was happening. I honestly didn't expect that.
Well, the most famous case, as you will know, is the case of Betty and Barney Hill, I think, in the United States, again, in the 1960s, who were driving along a road late at
yes.
night and found themselves some time later, some hours later, with a lot of missing time.
Right.
And then they started having flashbacks and recollections of some very disturbing things that happened to them, they say, on board an alien craft. Is this what we're talking about here?
Yes, this is what we're talking about here. I don't necessarily go with the view that the whole of Grantham at that time was boarded onto some alien craft, whisked away, and something happened to them. The way I perceive the situation is that this is in the mind. It is a mental process and something in the mind, because obviously, if you can conceive that abduction of a person could take place mentally, you wouldn't have to bother taking them anywhere.
So if you were some advanced civilization with advanced consciousness, you could is this what you're saying? Invade the consciousness of others and give them a virtual reality experience that they don't actually have to happen, have to have?
Your words.
That's fascinating. Well, what sort of experiences did these people think they had?
I have absolutely no idea on that. The book doesn't go that far.
Okay, is that not a flaw in it? You know, clever interviewers, when you do more promotion for this, and, you know, people who are doing general radio programs and TV programs, will immediately seize on the where is the detail?
Well, there is detail in the book, and I guess that the connection between the people, the site, and the story now is where the crux of the situation lies. It's certainly not, for example, you know, with the editor of the Grantham Journal, who sort of, while apart from vilifying me completely and the book as well, claims that you know, the Grantham Journal is involved in a cover-up. What we've actually written into the book regarding the Grantham Journal actually happened. It's you know, we have the names, telephone numbers of the people concerned, and we could not possibly have that information.
All right, well, you tell me what you say happened to do with that paper. I don't know that story. You tell me.
Well, again, if you read the book, the newspaper was approached. First of all, I was looking in the archives because there should have been something in the papers from 1965 which would indicate that there had been some UFO sightings. It's exactly the kind of thing that would have been put into a local into the local press at that time.
So you were looking for circumstantial evidence to back up the case?
I was looking for information. And my first visit was to the archive in the library in Grantham. And I searched the archive and found nothing. Now, with other information to hand, there, I knew there should have been something there. There should actually have been something about a UFO report. Now, there was nothing. The people in the archive section of the library there in Grantham then asked us, you know, and suggested, would we like to go and have a word with the Grantham Journal office, who might be able to help us further? Now, you must bear in mind that I'd never been to the town at that time, and so therefore my visit to them was completely unannounced. There was absolutely no way that they could know that anybody would be looking for anything UFO. I walked into that office, made my inquiry, to be absolutely bowled over when the lady smiled, picked up the phone and said, there's someone here asking about UFOs. The conversations went on. And it was explained to us that a relative of someone working in the Grantham Journal remembered a fabulous UFO sighting from 1965. They thought it had gone into the Grantham Journal, but apparently, and so did I, but apparently then it didn't. So we were given phone numbers to phone various people in connection with this. And from what I will say now is that to know the answer from that, you need to read the book.
Okay, well, I think that's perfectly fair. I don't know. So what are the Grantham Journal saying to you? I'll have to check with them. But what are the Grantham Journal saying to you now about that encounter that you had there?
Well, they're saying that it didn't happen. Basically, you know, they're saying that I've cast assertions against their staff. They're saying that I have chosen them to be the villain of the piece and that they are involved in a UFO cover-up. I'm amazed by all of this because, you know, at the end of the day, all we actually did was give them a press release saying we're going to be in Grantham doing a book signing.
Well, of course, at the end of the day, there are more of them than there are of you, if you see what I mean. And, you know, you're in a minority of one, aren't you? If you say something and they say something, who are people going to believe? A man who's making an outrageous claim, seemingly, or the newspaper, the Journal of Record? This is your problem.
I don't have a problem, actually, with what they've said, because, as I've already said to you, We have names and telephone numbers which we gained on that day from the people who work there.
Okay.
That we could not possibly have. You couldn't have that. It's impossible to have that if you didn't
And that material gleaned from those names and telephone numbers appears in the book?
No. The story, in terms of how it happened, is in the book, but obviously telephone numbers and names have been changed. We're not stupid.
Let's go along with what you say, that there's been a cover-up, if we assume for a moment that there has been.
No, I don't say there was a cover-up.
What do you say there has been?
I say that there was a mass UFO alien abduction in 1965. I don't use the word cover-up.
Well, if you suppress something, then what else is it?
Well, that is for someone else to say. I don't use that word. I don't need to use that word.
What word do you use?
We describe the story as it happened. I mean, this is a story that starts and finishes.
But the fact that it's not been on the front pages of newspapers before, or isn't something that's been widely talked about, certainly in the nation generally and around the world generally, and you would assume a story of this magnitude would have been, indicates that either it didn't happen or somebody somewhere has wanted to keep it quiet.
I'll go with the wanted to keep it quiet.
And I know you are somewhat concerned because, you know, there are people who, it is claimed, do not want these things to get out there, but who do you think stop this from getting out?
Well, nobody is going to stop it from getting out now.
Who made it more difficult to get out then?
Well, I think that when we were researching the details in and around the Grantham area, that's where we met our difficulties.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's where we met our difficulties.
With whom?
I wouldn't like to comment on that because...
And I don't want to put you in a hard position at all, and I don't want to make you say something you don't want to say, but did somebody approach you and say, I wouldn't be doing this if I were you?
No, not we haven't, using the role we there, that is myself and my researcher.
Uh-huh.
We've never had a person come to us and say, stop this. I'm very surprised that hasn't happened. And I will admit quite openly that I guess that I'm being slightly more careful these days than I might have been before. But don't read anything into that, because at the end of the day, I guess that to do... if I were to disappear off the face of the earth tomorrow... I guess that there could be somebody saying, well, this is interesting. I wonder if it had anything to do with that.
Well, I suppose the more exposure you get over this, the less likely that is to happen.
Absolutely.
If that makes you feel any better.
I'll tell you what is also interesting, that this book was released at the end of February. And when I was about I had done my first signing. So it was the first piece of sort of strong exposure to the public, and apart from it being available from all the book suppliers and all of this kind of thing. But the very next day, the MOD did that classic high-profile media exposure that they were announcing the result of their five-year report into UFOs and aliens, and I was absolutely staggered that this should just follow the next day, and compose of the facts that they say that UFOs do exist but aliens don't, and the grounds that they gave for this on absolutely, they're just no different to what they were several years ago.
It does seem that the ground hasn't shifted. Now, you will be interviewed a lot about this by people other than me, people for mainstream newspapers and mainstream radio and television shows, and they will automatically say, because it's almost like a textbook question, if you're a trainee journalist, you know, you would think of this question, and the question is, how do we know you haven't made up this story just to make money by selling a book? There it is.
Okay. Ask the people in Grantham.
And do you think that others in the media, perhaps people who have bigger audiences than you do at this stage, will start to ask the people in Grantham, or will this be another story that just goes into myth and legend?
I don't think that this story can go into myth and legend. If I have anything to do with it, it's not going to. I think it's far too important. I think if you look, you know, if you take a step back and say, oh, 40 years of UFO sightings and claims of alien abduction and all the rigmarole that's gone with that, and then you say to yourself, seems to be coming to an end. Well, I think we are at the end of an era with all of that. And what I do think is, I think that that everything, with the exception of Grantham, has been simply people's imagination, mistakes. It certainly has not been what governments and authorities have allowed people to think that it was.
Well, this includes things like recent sightings over countries like Mexico, where people have actually videoed objects in the sky.
I guess it does, yes. I mean, the fact of the matter is, on the one hand, we're being told that none of this stuff exists and that it is all explainable. If you take the stance of, you know, obviously not thinking of the situation as being little green men and that kind of image, you have to look further afield and beg the question, are we really on this little earth doing our thing? And there's nobody else taking any interest anywhere else at all in any way. I think if you begin to look at it like that, you have to say, well, something has happened.
Well, a lot of clever people will agree with the idea that there's bound to be, statistically, there's bound to be life elsewhere in the universe. I mean, we're even finding sort of traces of water on Mars, so it's only a matter of time.
Of course.
I think the thing that people will find difficult to swallow is what you say, is that everything else that's happened heretofore, and there have been a lot of sightings, and there's been Roswell and everything else, is an illusion, and the only thing that's correct is what you talk about in the book.
I think that that may be the case. That is my personal view. That is my personal view.
But you're sure that these people... how many of them do we think in Grantham, by the way? How many?
I believe that it was probably most of the population of the time, which could be up to 25,000.
Were affected in some way by mental abduction?
Yes, correct.
But all the other things that... that have come into the media over the years, even recent ones, or, I mean, we don't have to go through them here, we haven't even got the time, but things like the pilot of a British Midland jet between Britain and Belgium, chased by something in the sky, or pursued, or followed, or shadowed by something in the sky the size of a battleship, all that's nonsense.
Well, I'm not saying it's nonsense. Obviously, these people, they saw something. Something happened to them. But what that something is, it would be highly debatable. Okay, and I guess you're going to turn around and say, well, yes, what you're talking about is highly debatable. Well, I think that, you know, read the book, and I think you'll find that there's so much of it that is checkable. And then at the end of the day, there are also the images. I visited the site where the whole thing started, and took photographs just to have photographs of the site. Now, when those photographs were developed, and I would say they were taken on, you know, sort of proper photography, like paper chemical photography, the images that are in those pictures are extremely interesting. It just so happens. I would challenge anyone can examine those photographs. They've not been tampered with in any way. They're completely original, got the negatives. I mean, I would challenge anyone to look at them and, you know, from the standpoint that they could have been fake, because they haven't.
What would you like to happen now? Who would you like to see pick this story up? How do you want to see it develop?
Right. I've got that on my list of the questions that you were going to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very open-ended question, but I guess that I think that the can of worms has got bigger. I would like to see other people take this further, and I'm sure that there is more to be said about what happened, and more to be discovered.
So is it time for this to be investigated perhaps by, I don't know, some paranormal investigator, or university science department, or what?
Whoever would like to take it up.
Any combination of those things.
Yes, I mean, I'm not worried at all about anyone examining the details of this story in terms of its factual content, or the place that is mentioned.
So a bona fide researcher, I mean somebody who had good credentials, you would cooperate with?
Oh, yes, of course. Yes.
Okay, well, Anthony, I can only wish you luck with it. As they say, it's a difficult path you tread, but it's a story, obviously, from talking to you that A, you believe, and B, you believe needs to be told, and that's why you've told it.
I do.
So, do you ever fear that one of these days we'll get a knock on the door and there'll be a man in black? You remember the movie, The Men in Black? There'll be a man in black there saying, we have to have a word with you about something that you've written?
During the 5 years of writing... You know, when you're sitting there, writing is a lonely old job, and I guess that part of the spirit which carries you on is that part which encompasses things that might happen when eventually your book is published. And I have to say, no, I've never worried too much about getting that knock, but I'm certain that it could happen.
Well, now, I haven't seen the book. I want to read it. Tell me all about how I get it.
Okay, well, you can get the book from all bookshops. It's currently reaching the shelves slowly but surely, you know, because with a fringe type... it's amazing, isn't it? They call this a fringe type subject, and yet it's the most... I think it's the second most popular subject.
Well, I was going to say, you call it fringe, but if you look at the UFO section in my local Borders bookshop, you wouldn't believe that.
Well, there you go. So anyway, you can get it from any bookshop.
And it's called Asylum.
It is Asylum, the definitive UFO and alien abduction experience.
Do you have a website or any way that people who hear this now can contact you if you want them to?
The website is due to be opened in about a week's time.
All right, and what will the address be?
Now you've asked me. My software person didn't leave me that information.
Well, that's fine. What I want you to do, Anthony, if you would, is drop me an email and I'll put it on my website so that people can follow a link across to it, and then we can cross-pollinate, as they say. Anthony Armelis, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish you well with your book, and do let me know if there are any developments in this.
Okay. Can I put in one final thing, Howard?
Please do it.
Okay. One of the questions you were going to ask me, I felt was one of the most important that you could ask me.
Go on.
And the question that you... what that question was, how do you feel about being the person who has made this public? And what I would say to you is that as an author, I'm very proud to have this book in my name. I am also very proud that I had the balls to pursue what was often an incredibly difficult road to follow. But as a person, I've been profoundly affected and deeply humbled by the whole experience.
In what way? Tell me.
Because we are talking, and I've spoken to people in Grantham who say they were there. These are people that have been directly influenced by entities, aliens, something from somewhere else.
And if you come into contact with that, I mean, I've been silly, actually, for not
humbling.
Actually automatically coming to that point. Of course you find it humbling, but it must move you.
It does. It's, you know, as I sit here now speaking to you, actually, I'm as gobsmacked by the story now as I was when I first heard it.
Because if it's true, then it's a watershed. It's a signpost on the road to somewhere.
It is. It is absolutely that. Yes, it is absolutely that. You've actually put that far in a far better way than I could have done.
Well, Anthony, I've only... got to say, I wish you luck with the book, and as I say, please keep in touch. This show is called The Unexplained. The website for this show is www.theunexplained.tv, and this gentleman's name is Anthony R. Mallins. This is The Unexplained, coming to you around the world. Our website, www.theunexplained.tv. Follow the link to email us with your thoughts, suggestions, ideas about the show. Tell me how you think we're doing it. And again, thank you for all the emails with ideas and suggestions. One I am working on is the Liverpool Ghost Expert. Thank you for recommending that one. I'm trying to track him down. I've got a few leads on him, and we hope to have him on the show. I'm also working on a few other things that hopefully will appear right here, as they say, in the fullness of time. Thank you to Martin for the theme, and Graham Mullins, my webmaster. You can contact Graham if you'd like him to do work for you. I thoroughly recommend the quality of his work. You can get hold of him through the link on this website. This has been the third edition of The Unexplained. Onwards and upwards, as they say. I wish you well, be safe, be happy, and I'll see you soon here. My name is Howard Hughes.